but we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its Expanding Horizons. This permission can be obtained by emailing Unitarian SA, home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action, comment, since or visit us on Facebook or Twitter. By searching views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
We acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country, and we respect and value their past, present, and ongoing connection to the land and cultural beliefs. You should have got some notices today. We've advertised the multi-faith service on the 13th at St. John's. I've asked Jane to light the chalice today because I'm using her words for the chalice lighting. We are made of star stuff. The atoms in our bodies were once part of ancient stars. If stars did not behave as they do, we humans and all other living things with which we share our planet would not exist. It takes a universe to create life. We come here to affirm the unity of existence. May our lives be shaped by our respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are part. Jane's words were published in a Southern Chalice more than a decade ago, and they resonated deeply for me today because it was much the message of Carbon, the unauthorised biography, the film we watched yesterday as a fundraiser to cover our upgraded membership fees for the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change. Welcome to this place, made holy by our presence. It's rooted in love, inspired by wisdom, nourished by hope, grounded in our seven principles, fed by our traditions, and grown by our deeds. My name's Jenny Dyster, the outgoing lay leader of this spiritual community. This is my last service in this role. No matter how you identify yourself or whom you love, you're welcome here. These are our agreements, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. After the service today, please stay for tea, coffee, and cake. You're all welcome. The next hymn, it's on the hymn sheet, was handed out at the door. Just wave your hand in the air if you haven't got one. I think you'll recognise it's an old firm favourite. Well, you did, Norbert Chapek. Proud. He was the founder of the modern Unitarian Church in Czechoslovakia and came to a bit of a bad end due to Hitler, basically. I'll now ask Aaron to come and read the first reading for the day.
This is a commencement address at Kenyon, an Ivy League liberal arts college in Ohio, 2005, delivered by David Foster Wallace. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is actually no such thing as atheism. There is no such thing as not worshipping. everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, be it Jesus Christ or Allah, be it Yahweh or the Wiccan Mother Goddess, or the Four Noble Truths, or some inviolable set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap your real meaning in life, then you will never have enough. Never feel you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your body and beauty and sexual allure, and you always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally grieve you. On one level, we know all this stuff already. It's been codified as myths, proverbs, clichés, epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great story. The whole trick is keeping the truth up front in daily consciousness. Worship power and you'll end up feeling weak and afraid, and you'll need ever more power over others to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, and you'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. But the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, it's that they're unconscious. They are default settings. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into, day after day, getting more and more selective about what you see and how you measure value, without ever being fully aware that that's what you're doing. And the so-called real world will not discourage you from operating on your default settings, because the so-called real world of men and money and power hums merrily along in a pool of fear and anger and frustration and craving and worshipping of self. Our own present culture has harnessed these forces in ways that have yielded extraordinary wealth and comfort and personal freedom. The freedom all to be lords of our tiny, skull-sized kingdoms, alone at the centre of all creation. This kind of freedom has much to recommend it, but of course there are all different kinds of freedom, and the kind that is most precious you will not hear much talk about in the great outside world of wanting and achieving and display all. The really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness and discipline and being able to truly care about other people and to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad petty, unsexy ways every day. That is real freedom. That is being educated and understanding how to think. The alternative is unconsciousness, the default setting, the rat race, the constant gnawing sense of having had and lost some infinite thing.
It's our tradition to light candles for our joys, concerns, or insights. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening the circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind. I'll light the first candle in gratitude for the support that I've received this last 12 months especially. For our second reading today, I will read a poem in our breviary, When Lost in the Forest by David Wagner. When lost in the forest, stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you, and if you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or branch does is lost on you, then you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. We will now have 2 minutes silence, and you'll hear a bell, and the interlude will follow. Today, I'm mining our breviary for pearls of wisdom. The book was compiled by Rob McPherson, who asked everyone currently a member of the Unitarian Church to contribute a reading that informed their spirituality or connected with them deeply. Since then, the collection has been added to occasionally. It is used on a weekly basis by Moving Meditation and monthly by Lectio Divina. Both of these church groups are small, generally less than 10 people attending each session, and I thought if I shared some readings, which I like particularly, you might be interested to come in and browse during office hours, or maybe even come to Lectio or Moving Meditation. If you pop in any time, you can make yourself a cup of tea and find a spot in the church, in the annex, which is nice and sunny, or even the garden, to read. Give yourself a bit of me time. I'm going to start with a piece by Karen Armstrong, and this is our third reading from the breviary today. So-called new atheists such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens have denounced religious belief as not only retrograde but evil. They regard themselves as the vanguard of a campaign to expunge it from human consciousness. Religion, they claim, creates divisions, strife, and warfare. It imprisons women, brainwashes children. Its doctrines are primitive, unscientific, and irrational. Essentially, the preserve of the unsophisticated and the gullible. These writers are wrong, not only about religion, but also about politics, because they're wrong about human nature. Homo sapiens is also homo religious. As soon as we become recognizably human, men and women begin to start creating religions. We are meaning-seeking creatures. While dogs, as far as we know, do not worry about the canine condition or agonize about mortality, humans fall very easily into despair if they don't find some significance in their lives. Theological ideas come and go, but the quest for meaning continues. So God isn't going anywhere. And when we treat religion as something to be derided, dismissed, or destroyed, we risk amplifying its worst faults. Whether we like it or not, God is to stay, and it's time we found a way to live with him in a balanced, compassionate manner. And those were the words of Karen Armstrong. The following piece, the fourth reading, is by Teresa of Avila, a nun in the Roman Catholic faith. One can be pretty sure that crimes condoned, covered over, or even initiated by the Vatican are amongst those that our new atheists have in mind when they excoriate Christianity in particular. Nevertheless, St. Teresa's words have a ring of universal truth. They certainly appeal tremendously to the late wonderful Polly Gile. She served in three U.S. churches, the last one being Lexington for 16 years. She retired in 1992, but remained active in spreading religious freedom and connecting Unitarian Universalists around the world. Her many contributions include the establishment of the Ted Gile Village Bank. The Ted Gile Village Bank is a micro-lending organization in the Philippines, the joint endowment with her late husband Ted Gile, of a Unitarian school in the Khasi Hills of India, and promoting religious freedom and peace by founding the International Council of Unitarians and Universalists, ICUU. I think Pauline Rooney went to quite a few of those meetings, and being active in the International Association for Religious Freedom. She touched the lives of many, and she was much loved in Adelaide, where she served as an interim and visited again after retirement, which is when I met her, about 1997-98, sometime around there. Polly would paraphrase the following sentiments in modern, plain English, but I will read you an old text attributed to Saint Teresa and pasted into our breviary. God has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands. Yours are the feet. Yours are the eyes. You are his body. God has no body but yours. God has no body but yours. Now I have a piece by a science fiction or fantasy writer whom you may recall and maybe even still read, Ursula Le Guin. This piece is from the final novel of the Earthsea set of six. The original trilogy was published between 68 and 72, and the last two this century in 2001. The final novel, The Other Wind, is largely about death and the relationship between the dead and the living. "I think," said Tehanu, "that when I die, I can breathe back the breath that made me live. I can give back to the world all that I didn't do, all that I might have been and couldn't be, all the choices I didn't make, all the things I lost and spent and wasted. I can give back to the world, to loves that haven't been lived yet. This will be my gift to the world that gave me life. I did live the love I loved, the breath I breathed." And that was from Ursula Le Guin, The Other Wind. The sixth reading is another from Le Guin, but from a very different book. It was called The Dispossessed. The novel begins on Anaris, a desert planet, which is isolated from the rest of the civilized universe by walls of hatred, is run by left-wing idealists. Everyone is responsible for the well-being of everyone else, and no one owns anything. Egoizing is the ultimate sin. Everyone does their share of menial work. There are no prisons. Men and women are equal. But elitism is not tolerated, and Shevek's brilliance as a physicist is not exactly welcome. He decides to take action. He'll seek answers, question the unquestionable, and attempt to tear down the walls of hatred that have isolated his planet of anarchists from the rest of the civilized universe. He travels to the mother planet, Uras, a fertile, well-watered, green and beautiful planet, very Earth-like, in order to be able to complete his theory on a device that would allow for instant communication between planets. To do this dangerous task will mean giving up his family and possibly his life, and he must make an unprecedented journey to the utopian mother planet to challenge the complex structures of life and living and ignite the fires of change. The concept of utopia, though, comes in for a hammering. Neither planet qualifies. Here is an example of Shevek's musings. "For after all, it is joy we're after, the completeness of being. If you evade suffering, you also evade the chance of joy. Pleasure you may get, but you won't be fulfilled. You will not know what it is to come home. Fulfillment is a function of time. The search for pleasure is circular, repetitive, atemporal. The variety seeking of the spectator, the thrill hunter, the sexually promiscuous, always ends in one place. It has an end. It's not a journey, but a closed circle, a locked room, a cell. Outside the locked room is the landscape of time, in which the spirit may, with luck and courage, construct the fragile, makeshift, improbable roads and cities of fidelity, a landscape inhabitable by human beings. It is not until an act occurs within the landscape of the past and the future that it is a human act. Loyalty, which asserts the continuity of past and future, binding time into a whole, is the root of human strength. There is no good to be done without it. The thing about working with time instead of against it is that it's not wasted. Even pain counts. The Church That Will Last Forever by Leo Tolstoy, the seventh reading. The church which will live forever is the church composed of folk united not by promise or sacraments, but by deeds of truth and love. It has always lived and will live forever. And whether this church be in numbers great, it is nevertheless the church that never perish. The church that shall firmly unite within its fold the hearts of all humanity. The church that will last forever. That brings us to the end of today's readings. I hope you've experienced today's service as a mirror. Everything from the opening words to the closing words has been material gifted to me from this congregation via the breviary and a Southern Chalice, which was the ANZWA publication curated by Andrew Usher, whom you may recall was prevented by the pandemic from coming here to support us when Rob McPherson began his full-time employment at Pembroke. Our last hymn today is the one we learned last week. We greet you in peace. The last words are from Anne Johnson. May the inner light of our own being shine freely, rightfully at one with the universal light of the natural world. May we receive the beauties of nature as gifts of a kind, blessings from a world outside ourselves to the world within.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.